This is Audible.
Jin Fling, Bootleg Springs, Book 5, written by Lucy Score with Claire Kingsley, narrated by Natalie Duke and Stephen Dexter.
1. Jonah. "Activate those glutes," I told the 19-year-old star of his college baseball team.
"Dude, if I activate them any harder, they'll turn to stone,"
Eric complained, hefting the bar off the floor.
"Looks like he's doing just fine from where I'm standing,"
Mrs. Morganson observed from her vantage point directly behind him. It was a deadlift day. Once a week, I turned the weight room at Bootleg Springs High School into an open gym for all ages and abilities. The room was crammed full of equipment and smelled like sweaty, unshowered youth. The short windows just beneath the drop ceiling were stingy with sunlight they let in. But we made it work. It should have been a disaster. I was coaching kids on their summer break from college, middle-aged newbies just starting their fitness journey, a few long-time lifters, and a couple of senior citizens. Some were actually here to work out. Others were in attendance primarily for the eye candy. But somehow, no matter who showed up, we all had a damn good time. "Nice job," I said, slapping Eric on the back when he dropped the weight bar with a resounding clang. The kid was a hell of a lot stronger than his long, lanky frame let on.
"Wow-wee!"
Mrs. Morganson cheered. Minnie Fay, owner and operator of Minnie's Meow Meow House, elbowed her friend.
"Don't get us booted out of here like you did the football team's car wash," she cautioned.
Both ladies bent to pick up their significantly lighter bars. I winked at them as they made an energetic show of practicing the lift. "How you doing, Dee?" Doris to her family and Dee to her gym friends was glaring at her barbell.
"I wanted a PR today."
Frustrated, she swiped the sweat off her forehead with the hem of her t-shirt. Doris was 56 and 3 years on this side of a heart transplant. She'd tracked me down about a whole day after I decided to bring my personal training business to Bootleg last year. In a town this size, with residents this close, news traveled fast. She'd told me since someone had to die for her to be here, she didn't want to let them down. We had our first workout together that day, a walk through the lakefront park. We started small and slow, but her commitment never wavered. She'd already quit smoking before the transplant. After, she'd taken up walking. Soon I had her jogging and hanging around my pop-up boot camps. Then she'd discovered a deep love of heavy lifting. Somewhere along the way, she'd dragged her husband Josh into it. Josh had lost 25 pounds and started rowing. Doris added 10 pounds of lean muscle and was currently glaring at the weight plates on her bar that stood between her and her new personal record.
"How much you got on there?" I asked, already knowing the answer.
200. Can't get the dang thing off the ground."
She kicked at the bar with the toe of her sneaker.
"Tell you what, go grab a quick drink. I'm going to take some of the weight off, and we'll check out your form at 80 or 90% of your max, okay?"
She sighed, shrugged.
"Yeah, okay."
"Not every day is a PR," I reminded her.
"Yeah, yeah."
"She went to bed early last night so she'd be rested for lifting," Josh told me when Doris walked away. "Gonna be pissed if she can't beat her last."
"Don't I know it," I said, pulling a plate off each side of the bar. I swapped a couple out and reassembled the rig.
"That looks like more than..."
"Zip it," I warned him as Doris came back. Josh busied himself with his own bar and played it cool.
"Ready?"
I asked her.
"Yeah, I don't know what my problem is. Just feeling weak, I guess. Maybe it's allergies?"
"Maybe," I said, gesturing for her to step behind the bar.
"How much is this?"
she asked, adjusting the headband that tamed her wild, curly bob.
"Don't worry about the number. I just want to check your form. We'll get you to where you want to be when you're meant to be there," I promised her.
I know, I know. It might not be today, but we will get there.
She recited one of my many pep talks with a sigh.
I just really wanted it to be today. Today's the day, you know?
Your anniversary?
3 years ago, I was on death's door and woke up with a new ticker.
She thumped a fist to her chest.
Kind of wanted to be able to email the donor's family and tell them I had a big PR today. Let them know that part of him is still living on.
I put a hand on her shoulder, squeezed. Hey, I know that's the ideal, but let's work with the reality first, okay? Maybe it's something simple. It was relatively simple. The anniversary, the wanting to report to the family of the man whose heart she'd received. Doris had psyched herself out. We were 4 weeks out from our last deadlift day, and I knew she could hit 200. She just wasn't sure. She nodded, still disappointed.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's see if you can wave your magic trainer's wand.
She hinged from her hips and reached for the bar. Use the over-under grip, I instructed. It'll keep you from feeling like the bar's going to roll out of your hands. She nodded again, adjusted. This is going to be a little easier because it's not your max, so focus on the form. Count of three. 1, 2, 3. The class, sensing something big was happening, stopped what they were doing and ranged themselves behind Doris, watching, holding their breath. She pulled, face tight, the cords of her neck straining. The bar raised. Slowly, slowly it inched higher.
Go, 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 pull, I shouted. Pull!
The rest of the class echoed in varying pitches. Doris straightened, fully extended and red-faced, the bar clenched in her hands. The class cheered behind her. She dropped it and bent at the waist.
Why the hell are you guys making all that racket?
She blew out a breath, swiped her arm across her forehead.
Holy crap! I must be getting sick. That felt like 1,000 frickin' pounds.
That's because it was 215, I told her.
To what?
She blinked. 215 pounds.
215? I lifted 215?
I nodded, grinning.
215,
she said again, a whisper to herself. Josh grabbed her from behind in a tight hug. 215, he repeated. She squeezed his hands and calculated the weights in front of her.
Oh my God, that is 215. I lifted 215 friggin' pounds.
She escaped Josh's hold, turned, and threw herself at him.
I did it! Holy shit!
You did it!
He squeezed his eyes shut tight as he held his wife, who'd not only survived, but was living. I felt the arrow to my own heart and distracted myself by digging out my phone to commemorate the moment. The celebration was Super Bowl-winning touchdown-worthy. The class passed her from lifter to lifter for a round of back-cracking hugs and celebratory high fives, all celebrating like it was their own personal victory while music thumped in the background.
You lied to me,
Doris said, returning to me, hands on hips. Her face was flushed with happiness.
Just a little, I told her. You knew I was psyching myself out, and you mind-tricked me into making it happen,
she insisted. Her eyes were getting misty. I shook my head. You made it happen. Now go stand with your bar so I can take your PR picture. You can send it to your heart's family. Her lower lip trembled. There were more than a few pairs of glistening eyes surrounding us. Don't do it, I said, pointing at her. If you go, we'll all go, and then it'll be all over bootleg that I make my classes cry. You'll ruin my business if you cry. A tear slipped out of the corner of her eye as she came in for a tight hug.
Thanks, Jonah,
she whispered.
I'm really fucking proud of you, Dee, I whispered back.
Me too.
It was a good way to kick off the weekend. Dee's personal record cheered me enough to temporarily forget about my own personal life for a moment. The body that investigators had found and the questions it represented. Was my DNA tainted? Had my father murdered a teen girl? And what did that mean for those that came after? Me, my brothers and sister, what kind of legacy had he left us? This was the good in the world. The Dorises and the Erics and the Mrs. Morgansons. They were the good. I'd spend some time enjoying instead of worrying about the things I couldn't fix.
You know, Jonah,
Mrs. Morganson said, sidling up to me as I wiped down the bars.
You really ought to think about opening a gym space. Set up shop. Plant some roots. I bet that June Tucker would be more than happy for another local investment,
Minnie Fay added, looking innocent. Is that so? I said easily. The thought had occurred to me, but the bottom line was I hadn't decided if I was staying in Bootleg Springs or not. I'd been here a year. I had family here, a fledgling business with classes and personal training, but that didn't mean that this West Virginia town was home. Once the Callie Kendall case was resolved, then I would decide. Stay or go.
Think about it, Mrs. Morganson advised. Your own space to set up any way you want, a set schedule. I bet a gym would do real well in Bootleg so folks could work off all that moonshine.
I'll take it under advisement, I promised. Now, if you ladies will excuse me, I'm going to go celebrate Dee's victory with an egg white omelet before my next class.
2. Shelby. The brunch club served up fancy breakfast with steaming sides of hot gossip. Bootleg Springs residents bellied up to the restaurant's sleek concrete bar or leaned forward in cushioned booths to catch up on the town's latest rumors while enjoying goat cheese frittatas and fried chicken biscuits with mango chia smoothies. As a natural observer, I couldn't get enough of the crowd.
Did y'all hear that Mo Daly's bloodhound got loose again? Knocked up Lacey Dickerson's purebred shih tzu?
Mrs. Varney shouted over the restaurant din. In deference to the sunny late spring morning, she was decked out in cropped black elastic waist pants that stopped just short of her boobs. There were 7 of us squeezed into a big corner booth at the back of the restaurant. I was the youngest by at least 3 decades.
There's something for your notes, Shelby.
Old Jefferson Waverly, the only male member of our gathering, poked a fork in my direction.
Bootleg Springs has a long memory and a fine appreciation for karma.
Mm-hmm, the group nodded enthusiastically. They waited for me to write it down, and I obliged. I'd been adopted by the Breakfast Club, not to be confused with the Brunch Club, a collection of bootleg elders who generally doled out advice and caused mischief, especially on bingo nights. I'd come to town with a very specific objective and quickly came to the realization that I wouldn't be able to simply hang out on the sidelines and observe. No, this small town required full contact participation before it would open its arms to an outsider. It was participant observation at its finest. I was Jane Goodall and bootleggers were my subjects. They had tentatively accepted me as one of their own. Well, most of them had. There were a few outliers still holding out on me. But I'd wear them down. I always did. By involving myself in town life, I'd gained more than just the insight I was looking for. These crafty neighbors took my original plan and narrow thesis, doused it with moonshine, then set it on fire. At their behest, rather than conducting a few dozen or so face-to-face interviews, I'd built an online survey and made it available to the entire town as of 2 days ago. It included brief personality assessments, questions around how residents related to the larger community, as well as role identification tags and rating systems for compassion, social justice, and participation. Essentially, my little nerd survey was designed to pick apart exactly who Bootleg Springs was made up of and why they worked so well together,
The most recent shiny example of their community activism occurred when the town banded together to evict a crowd of overzealous, disrespectful journalists. Those same residents were now helping me earn my doctorate, one survey answer at a time. "Guess they'll have a litter of shithounds on their hands," Granny Louisa mused. Her life partner, Estelle, black to Louisa's Lily White, and genteel South Carolina to Louisa's rough-and-tumble West Virginia, high-fived her.
"Better than having blood shits," Jefferson cackled.
All around the table, good Southern ladies threw their napkins down and glared. Jefferson snickered.
"Anyway, serves her right for dumping that poor Jonah Jr. at the prom," Gertrude, a.k.a. Graham Graham, commented while scooping up grits.
The rest of the table clucked their sympathy, voicing their concerns that the man would never find a decent mate. I made a few notes in my notebook. The elders of Bootleg Springs shared an interest in the love lives of what they deemed the youngins. Apparently, with the pairing off three of the five Bodines, they were itching for a full house resolution. The poor Jonah Jr. they were discussing was Jonah Bodine, illegitimate son of the deceased Jonah Sr., and one of the holdouts who still didn't think highly of me. He'd shown up in town days after his father's funeral upon discovering from the obituary that he had four half-siblings. Jonah was, according to Mert Crabapple, the spitting image of his father and brothers, which meant Jonah was very, very attractive. He was tall, lean, strong, muscular, but not in a steroidal way. He had an easy smile and eyes the color of the grass after a good rain. He was here.
"Well, speak of the handsome devil," Estelle said, pointing her bacon in the direction of the door.
My little nerd heart beat out an approving tempo. He strolled inside in shorts and a sweaty t-shirt. I magnanimously decided not to take offense to the fact that my brunch companions had complained to high heaven about me showing up for our meal in my running clothes and my aches and pains that I tried to cover. They obviously didn't have the same qualms about post-workout Jonah. Every woman in the restaurant held her breath as he used the hem of his shirt to mop at his brow. That flash of abs had me bobbling my coffee cup against the saucer. The resounding clash tore eyes off Jonah's very nice eight-pack and delivered them to my flushed face. He dropped his shirt and looked at me. The friendly smile faded to stone. Strong jaw, subtle hollows under the Bodine cheekbones. Those eyes were cool, annoyed. My table mates took notice.
"Brr, is it just me, or did it get real cold in here?" Mrs. Varney said in what she thought was a whisper.
I met Jonah's blank stare with a bright smile. It said a lot for the man that he could dislike me intensely but still not bring himself to be rude. Mert waved him over, and I saw him hesitate for a moment. His negative feelings toward me seemed to be strong enough to make him consider avoiding the town elders. Interesting. The analytical part of my brain wanted to test which situations were more or less distasteful than a civil conversation with me. I scratched out a quick note in the margin of my notebook to consider it later. He ambled over to the far end of the table.
"Ladies, Jefferson," he said with a nod, pointedly avoiding further eye contact with me.
"We were talking, and we think it's time you find some gym space," Louisa announced.
The rest of the ladies nodded their heads emphatically.
"That seems to be the sentiment of the day," Jonah said cryptically.
"I know not a one of us looks a day over 50,
Gert said, patting her white hair.
"But we shouldn't be tripping over tree roots and free-range chickens to get to our happy hour workout."
Happy hour was the name residents over the age of 60 voted to call Jonah's senior fitness class.
"Mona Lisa McNugget number 5 sure is more adventurous than number 4,
Jefferson commented.
"Now, you wouldn't just be trying to get me to settle down, Graham Graham, would you?"
Jonah asked with a wink. Gosh, his smile was nice. No wonder the ladies loved him. Heck, I liked him,
and he wasn't even nice to me.
Gert, Cassidy and June's grandmother, feigned innocence and pathologically lied her cute little butt off.
I have no clue what y'all are talking about. I'm looking out for your welfare. Why, imagine if Estelle here took a header over a chicken in the park and broke a hip.
Everyone at the table, except for me, knocked on wood.
What about the high school gym?
Jonah prodded. He was a personal trainer, and I doubted there was a single lady within town limits who wouldn't be interested in him personally training her. I'd taken one or two of his boot camps before he became woefully misinformed and decided to dislike me. It was a shame. He was an excellent teacher, and I was in need of some athletic guidance.
We just think you would do a better business, especially with the summertimers, if you had a dedicated gym space,
Mrs. Varney insisted.
I'll think about it,
he promised, smiling at the table. His gaze skipped over me. I wondered if he would think about it. The man had come to town to get to know siblings he had never met, only to find out that his biological father was the primary suspect in a years-old missing person case. Growing up without a father and then discovering the man might be a criminal? Unless he cemented his bonds with the rest of the Bodines, Jonah wouldn't have a reason to stay in Bootleg. No reason to own real estate.
You do that, Jonah, Mert insisted.
She batted her lashes at him, and her glass eye glinted under the table's chandelier.
Care to join us for brunch? Estelle offered.
I'd love to, ladies, and Jefferson, but I've got a family thing to take care of. You all have a nice weekend,
Jonah said and headed up to the counter where his to-go order was waiting for him.
I bet it was egg whites and veggies. Gross.
The man was a paragon of health, and it showed. Rumor had it a pork rind had never crossed his lips.
Henrietta Van Sickle is due in for supplies,
Jefferson announced, restarting the gossiping portion of the meal.
Think Gert will get her to talk again. You mean force the poor woman to demand to be left alone? I am a delightful conversationalist,
Gert sniffed.
You blocked the woman's exit from the grocery store with your cart until she had to ask you to move,
Louisa argued.
Still counts. She talked to me.
I'd grown up in Charlotte and spent the last several years in Pittsburgh. The idea of a hermit sneaking into town once a month for supplies piqued my interest. To be fair, just about everything in Bootleg Springs did, including Jonah Bodine, I thought, idly watching him hustle out of the restaurant. He shot me a parting look before disappearing into the spring sunshine.
Shelby, honey, don't you think it's time to come clean with that boy?
Estelle asked. I shrugged, tucking back into my Eggs Benedict.
I agree. The Bodines are practically the heart of this town. You need them if you're going to write your fancy paper,
Mrs. Varney piped up. They had a point. A small one.
Your brother cracked the door open by moving in with June Tucker,
Jefferson noted.
Use that to your advantage. Show the Bodines they were wrong about you.
And I know just where you need to start, Gert said slyly.
Question. What's the most neighborly thing you've done for someone in your community? Jefferson Waverly.
I rear-ended Wade Zirkle last year at a stop sign to show my support for that Scarlet Bodine girl. Told the sheriff it was an accident because of my bifocals, but that Zirkle fella knows the truth.
3. Shelby. The sounds coming from inside the cottage suggested I'd arrived at a bad time. Someone was swearing. Something was ringing, and something else was yowling. I rapped briskly on the cottage door and pressed the doorbell. There was a crash, followed by a lot more swearing, and then the door opened.
Well, what in the hell do you want?
Scarlet Bodine glared at me and puffed out a breath to blow the mahogany hair out of her face. There was a cat attached to the leg of her jeans. I flashed her my friendliest, I'm not a threat, smile, and held up the platter of donuts and breakfast pastries I'd ordered to go from the brunch club.
Hi, I said chipperly.
Scarlet detached the cat from her leg and nudged him back into the house with her work boot.
I could hear her boyfriend, Devlin, on the phone somewhere behind her.
I repeat, what in the hell do you want?
She demanded coolly. But I noticed how her eyes tracked to the goodies, which, after my horrific run this morning, were starting to weigh heavily on my weakened arms.
Scarlet, I think we got off on the wrong foot, I began cheerfully.
If you mean you being a low-down, no-good, dirty, gossip-mongering she-devil of a reporter trying to infiltrate my family and dig up dirt on us as the wrong foot, then yes, yes, we did.
Undaunted, I removed the plastic wrap from the tray of carbs so the scent could escape and overwhelm her brain. Olfactory function was on my side. No one could stay angry when they were sniffing sugar.
I'm not a reporter. I'm not writing about Callie Kendall. And I promise, I'm not trying to infiltrate your family.
Scarlet looked at me with suspicion. But the scent of French cruller was distracting her. It smelled like victory to me.
You write for magazines, she pointed out. You showed up in town with the rest of your soulless, heartless, loafer-wearing journalistic weasel friends. I don't care if your giant brother is dating one of my very best friends in the whole wide world. That does not require me to be nice to you.
She snatched a pastry from the tray.
I do freelance, right? I agreed. For academic psychology journals. I'm writing a thesis involving field study on the bonds that exist between neighbors and small communities, and how these relationships can often be as strong as and as binding as actual biological or romantic relationships.
Scarlet bit off a corner of the cruller and blinked.
Say what now?
I'm getting my doctorate in social work. I'm writing my thesis on Bootleg Springs. On how your town chased off a pack of soulless, heartless, loafer-wearing journalistic weasels. GT can vouch for me,
I promised, hoping my brother wouldn't mind playing character witness for me if need be. I was staying in Bootleg Springs until I had everything I needed for the best damn thesis ever written on small-town psychology. And the Bodines might as well get used to the idea, because I wasn't leaving town without their input in my survey. Scarlet was still eyeing me like she didn't trust me any farther than she could pitch me off a dock.
You may come in, she said finally. But one wrong move, one word that I don't like, and I will chase you off my property with my daddy's shotgun. It's not loaded, but it still looks real scary, and I can swing it pretty damn hard.
Fair enough.
I followed her inside. The cottage was adorable, tiny, and stuffed to the rafters. Boxes lined one wall of the skinny hall. I turned sideways and edged past them, holding the tray aloft, making my back and shoulders scream in protest. The space opened up into a minuscule kitchen and teeny-tiny living room, both of which were overflowing with stuff. There were more boxes, some labeled, some open with their contents spilling out. Two clothing racks of smart suits bookended the small couch. Plastic totes and file boxes were built up in a wall in front of the TV. The cat zoomed in and out of stacks of books and magazines before sinking his claws into a cardboard box labeled Case Files 2010.
You stop that, Jedediah,
Scarlet ordered, whipping out a spray bottle and aiming it at the cat. The cat looked at her and I swear it grinned. He continued shredding the box until Scarlet sprayed him right in his little face. He yowled and sprinted off down the hallway.
If you'd just listened the first time, I wouldn't have to do that to you, she called after him.
Devlin, tall and impeccably dressed, was standing in the kitchen with a phone pressed to one ear and a finger in the other. He spoke attorney fluently into the phone and gave me a distracted smile. He dropped a kiss on Scarlet's head and ducked into the bedroom, shutting the door.
I'm pouring you some sweet tea, but only because it's polite. Then we can go out on the porch where you can attempt to win me over, at which you will undoubtedly fail, leaving me no choice but to escort you from my property.
She sniffed. I wasn't a fan of sweet tea. It made my teeth hurt, but I didn't feel safe admitting that to her.
Sweet tea would be so nice, I said cheerfully.
She glared at me and stomped into the kitchen where she produced glasses and a pitcher of sugar. She put it all on a tray and carried it to the sliding glass door. I pulled it open for her, earning a curt nod, and followed her outside. This was the kind of experience I needed to absorb and somehow translate in my dissertation. This adherence to tradition and etiquette, while still being borderline rude, it was fascinating. I found myself in a cozy screened-in porch that faced the sparkling waters of the lake that kissed the end of Scarlet's Land. My hostess dumped the tea on a small table for two. I added the pastries, and we sat.
"So, what the hell you want?"
she asked, pouring the tea.
"And don't even think about asking me one single question about that body those folks in New York found this week."
"Like I said, I'm not a reporter." Scarlett was a no-nonsense kind of woman. I liked that about her.
"The hell you say?"
She reached for another pastry. "I'm a grad student, not a journalist," I told her. "I'm working on a thesis for my PhD in social work." She chewed and studied me with suspicion. I felt compelled to keep talking. "Those writing credentials that Deputy Tucker found, those are all articles for psychology journals. The academic world puts a lot of weight on being published."
"So you're not a weasel reporter?"
she clarified. "I am not," I promised.
"Well then, what are you doing here?" Scarlett asked, relaxing perceptibly.
"Bootleg Springs managed to eradicate a predatory crowd of journalists in a time when sensational headlines are the only thing that matters for most news organizations. This tiny little town in West Virginia took on some of the biggest publications and blogs in the tri-state area and won."
"Hell yes, we did."
"I'm here studying how your community came together, how you're socially structured. I'm writing a paper about it, one that should earn me my doctorate." Scarlett sipped the tooth-hurting tea thoughtfully.
"Then why exactly did you turn tail and run out of town when Cassidy broke the news that you were a reporter?"
I blinked, not expecting that question. I wasn't big on lies, but I also wasn't looking to spread my personal life all over town. "I had some academic things to take care of." It wasn't exactly a lie. I had visited my advisor. It's just there were other things on my to-do list. Things I didn't think Scarlett Bodine needed to know. On cue, my back began to ache. I shifted on the seat, trying to alleviate the discomfort.
"Mm-hmm,"
she said, still watching me carefully.
"Then why were you cozying on up to Jonah? What were you trying to get out of him if it wasn't some exclusive on our daddy?"
My laugh surprised us both.
"I just thought he was cute," I confessed.
"Really, really cute."
"Of course he is. All my brothers are. So you're just saying you were flirting for the sake of flirting?"
I nodded. "Well, yeah. He's so tall and he has those green eyes and his smile is really nice."
"Shut up, Shelby,"
I ordered myself. I could feel my cheeks flushing. I had a big fat crush on Jonah Bodine. Fortunately, he thought I was a low-down, no-good something-or-other southern insult, so there was no requirement to actually act on the crush. I wasn't exactly in the position to get myself a boyfriend. After my degree, after I got the rest of my life in order, after I handled this latest round of bad news, but for now, I could enjoy admiring Jonah from afar.
"Fair enough. So why are you here today, besides telling me how pretty my brother is?"
she asked, kicking back in her chair. The lake sparkled through the trees behind her. The late spring breeze blew warmly through the screens. I took a deep breath and plunged.
"I need a place to stay. The inn is great and all, but I need something semi-permanent with room to spread out a bit for the summer."
Scarlett snorted.
"Tell me about it. Crews just broke ground on our new house 2 weeks ago, and I am counting down the days until Devlin has a closet as big as a shopping mall so I don't have to trip over a dozen suits on my way to the coffee maker."
"Well, congratulations," I said. "Since you brought it up, ask anybody in Bootleg Springs about real estate and rentals, and they'll tell you Scarlett Bodine is the woman to see."
I might be able to help you out, she said cagily. But first we should make small talk. It's the polite thing to do.
Scarlet, quick question for y'all. June, why do you announce the fact that you have a question? Why not simply ask the question?
George, what can we do for you, Scarlet?
Scarlet, your sister Shelby, is she a homicidal maniac or a compulsive liar or a real bad person?
June, I find these questions concerning.
George,
Shelby is none of those things. I think if you'll just give her a chance, you'll really like her.
Scarlet, would I like her as a potential sister-in-law? Like, could I stomach seeing her at the Thanksgiving dinner table for the rest of my life?
June,
I am uncomfortable with this line of questioning.
Scarlet,
are you two sitting on the couch next to each other texting?
June,
we are attempting to take advantage of our Hot Springs time slot. You are interrupting.
Scarlet,
sorry, Junebug. I just had this idea, and I need to know if I'm going to have regrets.
George, I've never regretted having her as a sister, if that helps.
June, which brother are you planning to mate her to?
Scarlet,
who says I'd do such a thing? Now, if y'all will excuse me, I have a new tenant to orientate.
4. Jonah. What do you think? Is it big enough? Bowie asked. I peered over his shoulder. Bowie and I were the same age, half-brothers who shared a father who disappointed us in different ways. I'd have expected him to have the biggest problem with me when I showed up in Bootleg Springs last year. But it had been Gibson, the oldest of all of us, who'd had the hardest time warming up to me. At least, Gibson didn't seem to warm up to anybody, so I couldn't take it too personally. His usual cheerless mood had taken a nosedive in recent days. He hadn't wanted to come on this outing and was scowling over Bowie's other shoulder.
Can you go bigger?
He asked, rubbing a hand over his forehead like he'd rather be anywhere but here.
Size definitely matters,
Jameson agreed, leaning his elbow on the glass.
You want one that could take an eye out.
Yeah, but Cassidy isn't going to want to have to push some mammoth thing around in a wheelbarrow, not with her line of work. You need to get her something she can have at work, something that won't hinder her from chasing down a drunken lawnmower driver or locking up Gram-Gram, I pointed out. Devlin leaned in on my right.
I agree with Jonah. That one sticks out too much.
You're the expert here, Bowie said to the woman in front of him. Is it too big? Not big enough? Does it stick out too much? The jeweler was staring at us with wide eyes.
What does your fiancé-to-be do again?
Bowie sang Cass's praises as sheriff's deputy, and the jeweler took in the new information. She nodded.
I've got some ideas. If y'all will sit tight, I'll be back in a minute.
I can't believe you're finally buying a ring for Cassidy Tucker, Jameson teased his brother. Gibson snorted.
I thought you two idiots wouldn't make it down the aisle until you both were in your 80s.
I looked around the store, hands in the pockets of my shorts. We'd made the trip into Perrinville so Bowie wouldn't get ratted out by any big-mouthed bootleggers. Devlin was peering into the case at a bunch of the sparklier rings a few feet away. Scarlet said not until she's 30, I reminded him.
My plan is the second that woman turns 30, I'm putting a ring on her finger,
Devlin said, still eyeing the diamonds in the case.
Couldn't hurt to look at a couple,
Bowie told him.
Maybe they'll give you a discount if you buy in bulk, I offered. You want in on this engagement action?
Devlin asked me.
No, thanks. I'll leave it to you all.
After a year here, I was constantly battling the contagious yawl.
What's your deal? You haven't dated since you showed up here,
Gibson demanded, crossing his arms and turning his back on the case full of futures. I couldn't say that Gibbs got nicer to me the longer he knew me, but he did get more aggressively curious. I could have answered the question, but I'd learned a lot from the Bodines.
could say the same about you, I shot back. Bowie snickered.
Gibbs doesn't date. Once every couple of months, he picks a lucky lady up at one of his shows, bangs her until she makes noise about commitment, and then shows her the door.
You don't even do that,
Gibson pointed out, ignoring our brother's criticism of his sex life. My face must have done something stupid because they all zeroed in on me.
You're into guys?
You're married but secretly running from your shrewish wife? You're monastic? Those jeans do highlight your ass, I told Jameson, who snorted approvingly. But none of those creative scenarios apply.
What's the deal, then?
Bowie asked. This was not a discussion I wanted to have, especially not with a man buying an engagement ring to seal his future. I was seeing someone and thought it could be serious, and then it ended. She dump you?
You chicken shit out?
She crawl out of bed in the dead of night, steal your wallet, and leave town?
That last one was from Gibson, and we all gave him a good long look. He shrugged.
Not saying it happened to me.
It was oddly specific, Devlin put in.
Can we get back to grilling Jonah? Gibson asked.
Right, Jameson said, warming to the game. One brother at a time. Was she a mail-order bride that took one look at your ugly face and ran screaming back to Russia? You're all the worst, literally terrible human beings, I insisted.
I've got a few options that I think you might like,
the jeweler said, returning with a velvet cushion of sparkly rocks.
Hang on a sec, Bowie told her. We're interrogating our brother. It'll just be a minute.
Take your time,
she said sweetly. She took her glasses off and started polishing them as if used to ring shoppers pausing to perform interrogations.
You might as well confess, Devlin warned me. They'll just pull out the single light bulb bag over your head routine otherwise.
He sounded like he spoke from experience. But I didn't like talking about Renee. It opened up too many feelings that would never have closure. You guys don't really want to hear about this, I insisted.
Now we really do,
Gibson insisted. He took one of the chairs in front of the jewelry case and spun it around backward, planting himself on it to wait me out. Her name was Renee, I said reluctantly.
Did she dump you for your best friend because she was pregnant with his baby?
Jameson asked.
No, I mean, she did dump me, but she didn't dump me for someone else.
Ouch, that's the worst. Was it the whole I need to focus on myself speech? Bowie asked.
No, she, we'd only been dating a short time when she found out
that she was actually a man in a woman's body,
Gibson filled in.
That did happen to me once. We didn't sleep together, in case you were wondering. Just had a few drinks.
How is Tony?
Bowie asked.
Doing great. Lives in Boise, fishes every weekend, two kids. Still get a Christmas card every year.
Back to Renee,
Devlin said, guiding us back to the topic I'd rather avoid.
Can we come back to Tony?
I asked.
Why'd she dump you?
Jameson asked. We'd only been dating a couple of weeks, and she found out she was sick.
Like a head cold, or maybe herpes?
Bowie asked hopefully. I shook my head. No, like cancer.
Shit,
Gibson said succinctly. Said she didn't want me to have to take on her illness. I said, trying to shrug off the memory. Said she'd feel better if she didn't have to worry about me worrying about her.
Man, Jameson said.
You never tried to talk to her after? Bowie asked. I wet my lips, hating this part of the story. She died
5 months to the day of our first date. We didn't live together or anything, didn't even say I love you, but I really thought there was a future there, you know? They all nodded somberly. The jeweler blew her nose noisily behind the counter.
I'm sorry for eavesdropping, y'all, but that is the saddest story.
I just haven't felt like getting to know anyone since. I'm waiting till I feel better about it, I told them. There was more to it. My anger at her shutting me out, the helplessness at not being able to do a goddamn thing, the fact that the only thing I could do was respect her decision. The last time I saw her was for coffee, right before her first last-ditch treatment. She'd held my hand and wished me luck with everything, like I was little more than a stranger to her. The next time I'd laid eyes on her, she was in a church, looking like she was asleep. 2 weeks later, I'd seen Jonah Bodine's obituary, and Bootleg Springs started to sound like a good idea. Can we get back to buying rings? I asked, my voice hoarse. Devlin gripped my shoulder. Jameson punched me in the arm. Bowie pulled me in for a one-armed hug before releasing me again. Gibson gave me a tight nod and some advice.
You might not want to tell Scarlett any of that. She'll get it in her head that you need a woman.
They all shuddered.
If she even gets a whiff of you being this sad, loveless puppy, she'll be throwing every bachelorette in town at you, Bowie agreed.
I'm not a sad, loveless puppy, I argued.
Do you want to go grab a drink?
The jeweler asked me, her eyes glistening behind her glasses.
My place is just a couple blocks away, and I have a real nice box of wine.
Thanks. Maybe some other time, I told her. Bowie took pity on me and changed the subject.
Jame, you want in on this action?
He asked, waving a hand toward the rings on the counter. Jameson shrugged.
Nah.
You're not thinking about proposing? I asked, surprised. The way he looked at his girlfriend, Leah May, suggested otherwise.
Oh, I'm proposing, and I'm doing it better than these two rookies. I've been working with a goldsmith. She's helping me custom design a ring. I'll actually do some of the work.
Well, fuck me, Bowie complained.
Can we get some bigger diamonds here?
Question. During a party, do you prefer to be in the center of the room or on the perimeter? Opal Bodine.
Depends where the bar and snacks are.
5. Jonah.
Hey, Mom.
I answered the call, steering my car into the town limits.
Well, if it isn't my long-lost son finally answering his phone,
my mom teased through the car speakers. She hadn't been exactly thrilled with my sudden desire to move across the country to meet my half-siblings, but her desire to support me won out. She'd accepted my move reluctantly, but I'd been here so long she was starting to make noises about me coming back. I emailed you yesterday, I said dryly.
A lot can happen in 24 hours. You could have met a girl, you could have finally given up trying to speak Southern and decided to move home, you could have saved an elderly grandmother from a purse snatcher.
Zero of those things happened, Mom. I came to a stop for Mona Lisa McNugget, who sashayed her way across Rum Runner Avenue. I lived in a town with its own free-range chicken. The novelty still hadn't worn off.
What are you doing right now?
She asked.
Watching the town chicken cross the road.
She laughed.
I can't decide if you're pulling my leg with half the things you tell me, or if Bootleg Springs is as crazy as it sounds.
I watched as Minnie Faye, dressed in a green sweatshirt embroidered with cross-eyed kittens, dashed after a stray cat as it skirted two parked cars.
Come back here, you fluffy feline,
she yelled, puffing past me.
I heard that, Mom said, and I don't even want to know.
A wise decision. What do you want to know?
Your email said you moved again. Where to this time? A cardboard box with a hobo on the town square? Into a mansion with an eclectic millionaire who only speaks pig Latin?
Funny, Mom. I have my own place this time, I told her. I didn't tell her that I was living out of boxes. There was no point unpacking when I'd just be packing them back up for whatever reason.
No roommate?
She asked. Just me, myself, and I. I can floss naked at the dining room table if I want to.
Dental health is important, she said mildly. Send me pictures so I can be sure you're not living in a locker in a bus station. Of the house, not you flossing naked.
Will do, I promised. What's new with you?
She told me about the customers who came into the diner today and filled me in on the new yard decor her across-the-street neighbor Phyllis put up in honor of Flag Day. We spoke once a week, either by phone call or video chat, and by email more often. My mother was funny, smart, and, in my opinion, entirely too good for the life she'd been saddled with. My father, may he rest in peace, as they say reflexively in Bootleg Springs, left college student Jenny Leland pregnant and partnerless. She'd given up her dreams of a degree in psychology and started waiting tables. She shopped garage sales and thrift stores, clipped coupons, and built a happy paycheck-to-paycheck existence for the two of us. She'd ended up waitressing at a diner where the owners treated her like family. I'd spent a good portion of my childhood tucked away in a booth or curled up in the closet-sized office. She was an assistant manager now, but still took shifts to keep her regular customers happy. It was a respectable living, but I wanted more for her. She deserved more. And as soon as I landed, wherever it was I was supposed to be, I'd see about getting that more for her. We hung up after she extracted another promise from me to send her a picture of my new place. I grinned to myself, knowing how she'd fall for the little yellow house. Scarlett Bodine was quite the real estate mogul and shrewd negotiator. I'd had to check to make sure I still had my shirt by the time we were done arguing over the lease. The arguing had made me feel like family. And so had the invite for ring shopping, I realized, as I turned onto the gravel lane that wound its way through the woods. Devlin and Bowie had picked out rings with diamonds big enough to compete with the idea of Jameson's custom design. The jeweler had chipperly rung up the sales while Jameson showed off a sketch of Leah May's ring. Gibson and I, finding common ground of being happily unattached, grunted and nodded our approval. Commitment wasn't something I actively avoided, but looking at my lifestyle, a business with no home and a 3-month lease on a rental I'd negotiated down from 6, it did make a man think. Most of my half-brothers seemed hell-bent on planting roots, to marry, settle down, but I was still waiting for something. The house came into view through the trees. It was a 2-bedroom cottage with tiny rooms and big windows that invited the woods inside. On a breezy day, I could catch glimmers of the lake through the foliage. The best part was the lakeside trail that cut right through the property, making it convenient for my runs. I thought about hosting a post-run cookout here for the trail running group I'd organized, decided it wasn't a terrible idea. Some beer, a grill, good times, and good people. When I pulled around to the house, I realized I wasn't alone. The front door was wide open, and there were 2 vehicles parked on the gravel circle by the porch. One of them was Scarlett's pickup truck. I pulled in behind her and got out just as she skipped down the steps of the front porch. She waved cheerfully.
Hey, Jonah! Was wondering when you'd get back.
She pulled a box out of the bed of her truck, and I took it from her. You moving in? I asked.
Not me. Although if Devlin thinks he can bring one more pair of shoes into the house, I might give him the boot until construction's done.
She winked, and I knew there was nothing but love behind her teasing. I had a feeling she'd be ecstatic over that diamond he'd pocketed today. She hadn't answered the question I hadn't asked directly.
So, what are you doing?
I asked, picking a box from the truck and following her up the porch steps with it.
I'm helping your new roommate move in,
she said cheerfully. I missed a step and smashed my shin on the porch.
Ugh, my what?
I winced.
Hey, Scarlett, do you want the security deposit now or... Oh, hi, Jonah. Come on in.
Shelby Thompson, or according to Cassidy Tucker, sneaky-ass reporter Shelby Thompson, was standing in my doorway, smiling at me, inviting me inside my own damn place. She was short and curvy and always smiling. She had thick brown hair with a heavy fringe of bangs that framed out her wide eyes, green and brown that made me think of the forest floor. Creamy skin, thick lashes. She was pretty in a girl-next-door kind of way. Until she smiled, and then people tended to take notice of something that went deeper than pretty. Of course, none of that made up for the fact that she was one of the horde of journalists that had descended like a biblical plague on Bootleg Springs to get a piece of the Bodine family over the whole Callie Kendall case. She'd flirted with me, and I'd flirted back. It pissed me off that she thought she could get to the rest of my family through me, that I was the weak link somehow. It also pissed me off that she'd somehow wormed her way back into the town's good graces, that we were all just supposed to forgive and forget.
Now that you're both here, we can talk arrangements,
Scarlett said, leading the way inside. Shelby frowned.
Arrangements? I thought everything was settled.
What are you two doing in my house? I demanded, dumping the box on the porch.
Your house?
Shelby blinked and looked at Scarlett. Scarlett grinned her diabolical Southern girl master of manipulation smile.
This is such good news for you both,
she said, clasping her hands in front of her. I knew this was going to be bad.
Jonah, remember when you signed your lease, you agreed that, if I needed, I could rent out the second bedroom?
I vaguely remembered something about that, but Scarlett had been pouring celebratory moonshine when she went over the documents, and things had gotten a little bit fuzzy. Fuzzy enough that Devlin had to drive me home. I don't recall, I hedged.
I'll email you a copy of the lease and highlight the pertinent section,
she promised.
In the meantime, say hey to your new roommate.
Wait a minute, Shelby began.
He lives here? And now so do you,
Scarlett said, tossing her a key.
Isn't that great?
She bobbled the key and seemed slow to lean down to pick it up.
You didn't say Jonah lived here,
Shelby began.
I have a feeling you two are gonna get along like two pigs in a blanket.
What the hell are you talking about, Scarlett? Also, I should have a say in who I share a house with, I cut in.
Well, you see, pigs in a blanket are...
Scarlett Bodine, you're up to something, I said, pointing a finger at her. She was immune to my sternness.
I thought you two would be pleased as punch. Now you're only responsible for half the rent.
I'm not living with her, I said.
Her has a name. It's Shelby, and I didn't ask to be your roommate either,
Shelby said, crossing her arms. She gave me a disapproving look through her glasses. Scarlett, can I talk to you outside? I said, taking my sister by the arm and dragging her toward the door. She must have been feeling friendly, since she didn't take a swing at me or try to kick me in the balls. I let the screen door slam behind us. What game are you trying to play?
Game?
She gasped.
Why, Jonah Bodine Jr., how dare you insinuate that I'm playing some sort of game when I gave you this house to live in at a discounted rate? I put family before business, and you're expecting me to just, what, stop making money altogether? Will that make you more comfortable, Jonah? Will it?
She poked me in the chest, and I backed up a pace.
Ah, I'm not asking you to not make money. Because that's exactly what it sounds like. It sounds like you're trying to take advantage of my generosity. I didn't have to rent this house to you, did I?
No, but...
And you don't expect me to stop running my business of putting paying people in my rentals, do you?
She took another step forward into my space. I had close to a foot on her, but I was man enough to admit that my sister scared the hell out of me. She was unpredictable, and that made her dangerous. She was also a biter.
No, however, I'm so glad we have that settled. Now, you and Shelby will share the little yellow house for the next month. After that, I'm sure I can juggle some of my renters around at great expense to myself and get one of you into a different damn place. But until then, I expect you to say, "Thank you, Scarlet." And pay your damn rent, which is now half of what it was before I so generously bestowed a roommate on you, on time.
Thank you, Scarlet.
You're welcome, Jonah,
she said, batting her lashes at me from under her bootleg Cockspurs ball cap.
See you around, Shelby,
she called into the house as she tromped down the stairs. Me. Which one of you dumbasses opened your big mouth to Scarlet about me being a sad puppy? Bowie. I was planning on it tomorrow. Why? Gibson.
We all would have. No one's had a chance yet.
Me. She just gave me a roommate. Jameson.
Of the female persuasion?
Me. Shelby Thompson, GT's little sister. Devlin. Scarlet works in mysterious ways.
Gibson. You can do better than that, McAllister.
Devlin. Your sister amazes and terrifies me. I fully support whatever scheme she's concocted. Bowie.
Amen.
Me. I hate you all.
6. Shelby. I'd been Scarlet Bodined, and I hadn't seen it coming. I'd heard rumors of such things, I'd been warned, and I'd still been steamrolled by a tiny southern belle whose master manipulations deserved to be immortalized in the annals of psych journals. I was tempted to throw out my 50% done paper and start all over with Scarlet as the star. Then Jonah walked back into the house. Our house. This was not the ideal solution I'd thought I was engineering for myself, and now I was stuck in a house with Jonah 8-Pack Bodine. Hi, I said when he came to a halt and just stared at me with those green eyes. Smooth, Shelby, super smooth and casual. I was a nerd, and as a nerd, I excelled in flirting with nerd men. My interactions with tall, lean, frowny athletic types were slightly less natural. He was dressed in workout gear, shorts, a t-shirt, sneakers. And everywhere I looked, I saw things I liked. Muscle. Stubble. Sharp green eyes that looked as though they could peel my skin back and look inside me. He had a breathtaking smile that I'd spotted a time or two, but he definitely wasn't aiming that particular weapon at me now. He gave me a long, blank look. Nervously, I smiled wider. His brows knit together. Our facial expressions were carrying on different conversations. I knew there was a simple misunderstanding at the heart of Jonah's barely concealed contempt for me, but I also knew he wasn't exactly amenable to clearing the air right now. I'm sure we can work this out, I said cheerily.
I don't know what you did to make my sister think this was a good idea, he said calmly. I don't want to know. You stay out of my way, and I'll stay out of yours.
With that, my new roommate,
somberly climbed the stairs to the second floor. A moment later, I heard a door slam and music kick on somewhere above me. Scarlett's abbreviated tour hadn't actually included the upstairs, but I'd get to that. For now, it was imperative to establish a territory. I was in a hostile living situation, and I was not about to let the enemy corral me into a bedroom. With him pouting or manscaping or learning to play death metal on the ukulele, whatever attractive athletic types did in their spare time, I was free to assert myself downstairs. It would be too easy in this situation to retreat, to ensconce myself in a bedroom and stay out of Jonah's way. He'd been here first. But I was sticking. I was staying in Bootleg Springs until this dang dissertation was finished, and I was going to be comfortable while doing it, gosh darn it. Glancing around, I tapped my fingers to my lips. The kitchen was a galley set up with the back door at the far end. Not enough room for me to spread out in there. Heck, there was barely enough room to open the refrigerator door. And forget about opening the refrigerator and the oven door at the same time. The dining room was on the other side of the kitchen wall. It had a funky wallpaper mural of birch trees and a battered and charming table that overlooked the scrap of backyard. But the high-backed chairs would be too uncomfortable for me to spend long hours in them. The living room would do, I decided, testing the overstuffed beige couch. It was comfortable and angled toward the fireplace and the TV mounted above the mantel. There was a big window looking out onto the porch, and a shabby, chic occasional table and two chairs tucked into the corner. I could confiscate that area and use it as my office. Back out on the porch, I grabbed my most important belongings, my laptop bag and my box of research. Nothing was going to derail me this time. Nothing was going to stand between me and my degree. I plopped everything down on the table and lowered myself back onto the couch. Decision made, space claimed, I closed my eyes for a minute. The backache was sharper today, and I regretted carting all of my belongings onto the porch. Now they'd need to be hauled upstairs, and I lacked the energy for it. I was towing the line already. Much more, and I'd shove myself right over the edge. I'd focus on the essentials. Everything else would be safe on the porch. It was covered. I wondered if there were bears in Bootleg Springs. I wasn't exactly the outdoorsy archetype. I was the stay-inside-and-read-a-book type. Living in Pittsburgh for the past few years had limited my wildlife experiences. I dozed off, imagining a fat bear pawing through my box of academic journals. I woke up to a fierce frown and green, green eyes. My first thought was, bear! Flailing, I rolled right off the couch cushion. But I didn't hit the floor. Somewhere in my nap-addled brain, it registered that my new safety net was a pair of hands. What is wrong with you? Jonah grumbled, rolling me back on the couch. I flopped gracelessly like a walrus. A lot of things. You don't really want to know. Are there bears here? I shouldn't have flailed. Research recommended playing dead in a bear attack. Bears? I thought you were a bear when I woke up. Did you know that there are timber rattlesnakes and northern copperheads in this part of the state? That probably means there's bears, too. He was making me nervous, looking at me all grumpy and confused, and so close. I could reach right out and touch him. Not that I would. I was an academic, not an idiot. You were moaning in your sleep, he said, ignoring my bear question. That happens sometimes. I sat up, managing to keep my old lady noises to myself. Your stuff is still outside, he pointed out. I felt like he was running through a list of my most immediate flaws. Sleep moans and disorganized porch hoarding. My back sang the first few bars of O Fortuna. Yeah, thanks, I'll get it. I stepped stiffly around him and headed for the door. 1 month, he said. I paused. What? Scarlett said in a month she could move one of us to another rental. That wasn't so bad. I could spend a month staring at Jonah's sweaty back muscles. We can handle a month, can't we? I guess we don't have a choice, he said, clearly not thrilled at the idea.
That's the spirit.
Do you seriously have to cook dinner right now? Jonah growled as I ducked under his arm to get at the oven.
The kitchen was small under the best of circumstances, but put two adults intent on cooking at the same time while avoiding each other in it, and it became a shoebox.
Since you're the one with the problem, maybe you should cook your dinner later, I pointed out the logic of the situation.
I don't have a problem, he argued.
Jonah Bodine was turning out to be as temperamental as his half-brother Gibson.
Are you always so moody, or is it situational?
I reached into the oven and flipped my chicken nuggets over, blowing on my fingers. Ouch. He grabbed my hand and slapped a pair of tongs into it.
Use the right tools for the job.
It wasn't his intended effect, I was sure, but I felt a little shiver of biochemical reaction work its way up my spine. Jonah was not my type. I liked the academic, glasses-wearing, let-me-tell-you-about-my-research type. But the fact that I was reacting to Mr. Frowny Jock on such a physical level was interesting.
Thanks.
I flipped the rest of the nuggets without scorching off my fingerprints.
I'm not moody,
he grumbled, pushing the handle of the frying pan out of my way when I stood up. He was sautéing vegetables, a whole bunch of them. I sniffed at them with suspicion. I'd been born a picky eater, and to my parents' undying embarrassment, I was still a picky eater at 30. I kept waiting for this adventurous palate that everyone assured me would come, but sushi grossed me out, mushrooms made me gag, and don't even get me started on lunch meat or mayonnaise.
Are those nuggets shaped like dinosaurs?
They are. I beamed at him, rewarding him for his attempt at polite conversation. I could spend a month positively reinforcing him.
That's not food.
I looked at the cookie sheet. Of course it's food. I cook it. I put it in my mouth. It's food.
Food is fuel with nutrition.
It's meat. Meat is nutritious. At least I assumed it was. Jonah looked at me like I was the dullest crayon in the box.
Look, we don't have to be friends, but we don't have to be enemies, I told him. You are the enemy, he said.
I could have corrected him, but his attitude was annoying. I didn't care if he liked me, I decided. I wasn't here to make friends or develop a crush. I was here to work. And maybe I would take just the tiniest bit of pleasure in letting Jonah act like an idiot for a while.
Do you really think your sister would make you share a house with a sworn enemy?
I haven't known her that long. It's a possibility. My annoyance inched up into irked territory.
I'm not your enemy. Let's just be adults about this. How bad could the next month possibly be?
7. Jonah. It was horrible. The house that had seemed reasonably sized just days before was getting smaller by the minute. She was everywhere. I was an early riser by nature. I enjoyed the dawn of the day with its reverent silence and quiet potential. There was nothing reverent or quiet about Shelby dancing around to Maroon 5 and Panic at the Disco while making those god-awful sugar bomb toasted pastries. She wanted to make small